Gavin's Den is Wrecking Ball Radio.
Hello, everybody. You are listening to Davin's Den. Yes, Davin's Den, the show that is better than eating a bowl of fresh, delicious poison. We're better than that. Better for your kidneys. I'm your host, Davin Roseblatt. I'm joined by Joe Curry.
Hello.
And Pip Helix.
Hi, everybody.
This is one of those shows where Joe says, you know, one minute we could be talking about government policy, and the next minute complete nonsense. This is that show.
Welcome.
Yes.
When I put this together, I go, yeah, he's got a point.
So we're going to have a very, very interesting debate, and then we're going to be talking absolute silliness.
Yes, yes,
and
we will.
A lot of humor.
Yes, we have, so we have an eclectic show planned nonetheless. We'll have a serious debate in a few seconds, but we're going to start with, after that, is farting good for your relationship? We're going to have an interview with a friend of the show, David Harris, as he'll be telling us a new method, or maybe not a new method, that I was unaware of, that Facebook is keeping tabs on us.
Mm.
An interview with writer and director for the new comedy, Is That a Gun in Your Pocket? That's Matt Cooper.
Nice.
We'll be talking with him. And what does having a dark sense of humor reveal about you, according to a new study? But this story that we're about to cover is not getting a lot of media attention, but it should, I would think. I would think people would have an opinion on it. So I'll play some audio, then I'll fill in some more blanks, and then we can discuss it.
The head of the Environmental Protection Agency is rejecting safety recommendations previously made by the agency. On Wednesday, Scott Pruitt okayed the use of chlorpyrifos, a pesticide linked to serious health and brain issues, especially in children. He said more scientific evidence is needed before banning it. The EPA has slowly been limiting the use of chlorpyrifos for over a decade. In 2000, the agency banned it in households. In years following, it steadily reduced how much of the chemical could be used on crops. And in 2015, the EPA proposed chlorpyrifos be banned completely. But the company that makes the product argued the science behind it is debatable and has pushed the EPA to back off a ban. Now, Pruitt has done just that. The EPA chief said in a statement his agency is, quote, returning to using sound science to make decisions. Pruitt's appointment as head of the EPA was controversial. He sued the agency he now leads over climate change last year. And in early March, Pruitt said he doesn't believe carbon dioxide has a major impact on global warming.
And that report was done by Newsy. All right, so this a little bit more background information. The chemical is used in 100 countries, in over 100 countries, and over 50 crops. We all know we do import fruits and vegetables. Annual testing reports by the USDA show chlorpyrifos?
I don't know.
Chlorpyrifos residues in nectarines, peaches, cucumbers, and other crops. Even low-dose exposure of organophosphates, particularly in the womb, have been found to harm brain development in children, leading to a higher risk of learning disorders like autism, other mental disorders. We've seen a rise in autism and other mental disorders in children over the past several decades. There's no disputing that.
No.
In January, a January letter to the EPA was written by dozens of doctors, nurses, and professors urging the agency to revoke all tolerances of chlorpyrifos. Pyrifos. Not.
You have an easier pronounced story?
No. The letter states, with each year of delay in canceling food tolerances and agricultural and other uses of the word, more children are unnecessarily at an elevated risk for problems in learning, social skills, motor function, and other developmental domains. Okay, so that's the gist of it. Growing up, and I think a lot of us were taught this, but you could correct me, we were taught when it came to a lot of instances, well, according to Pruitt, this isn't settled science. According to Pruitt, this
right.
Isn't. But we were all taught better safe than sorry.
Yeah.
you know, what was it, like an ounce of prevention is worth a pound of cure. With something so serious like this.
Mm-hmm.
And there is all this science behind it.
Right.
Why not just keep the ban?
Well, one of the reasons, what the EPA is claiming,
this is the new EPA. Pruitt's EPA, not the EPA before, because they started banning this in 2000
yes.
under Bush. Mm-hmm. So it's not a Democrat-Republican thing. They've been steadily taking action against this particular chemical for 17 years.
Right.
So let's not say not all EPAs are created equal.
Well, I think this is what was said before the takeover, where they've been questioning it. They were saying that the EPA, this is from the USDA, it's not the EPA. This is the USDA going against the EPA. So the EPA is the one, obviously, that's going to overturn this rule. The USDA has been in favor of not having the, you know, of the ban being overturned. The USDA is
I did not see that.
The USDA is one of the proponents because the USDA is behind it. Because
of the farmers.
It's the most effective. Now, what they're saying and what the USDA, not the EPA, they're critiquing the EPA. Now, what they're saying is the USDA, the EPA apparently made the assumption that chlorpyrifos or first.
Yeah, you can't say it either. I know. The bad chemical made by Dow.
That bad thing.
Would always
the poison on your fruits.
And the studies that they made would always be used at the highest application rate on all possible crop acres. The USDA said this approach was overly conservative and could be refined. They suggest the information shouldn't be refined, but it should be declared false because it does not represent the fact because it's not being used at the highest application rate. Another devastating fact he said that was ignored by the EPA and the New York Times, the U.S. Pesticide Data Program has sampled groundwater and drinking water for that bad chemical, including its school and daycare wells for the past 15 years, and none of that was detected in hundreds of water samples.
Right, but they are finding it in fruits. And they say, well, you know, kids are more prone to, like, being susceptible to it because they use their hands more.
Yeah.
So that it's on the skin.
It's not necessarily something you can wash off of
right,
the skin.
Right, it's actually in the fruit, and they use their hands, a lot more hand-to-mouth contact. Mm-hmm. But we were told in the healthcare debate on the right said, you need to get the government out of making the decisions. Let's have the doctors make the decisions for the patient. Very compelling argument.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know if I agree with how they're saying that, but a very compelling argument nonetheless. But here you have the doctors and scientists writing and saying, listen, you should not be using this. You're making a mistake. And the government is intervening. It seems hypocritical to me.
I think the reason that the government is intervening is because basically the way they're – and I'm speaking.
I think they're intervening on behalf of the farmers.
That's what it is. I could say that because basically they're questioning how the sampling has been done. You know,
but again, that goes back to safe than sorry.
Mm-hmm.
It goes back. Listen, I can tell you, my daughter who is now 10, there were some things going on with her, and we were getting regular fruits and vegetables and milk. We still get regular fruits and vegetables because she doesn't eat them. But we did go to organic milk.
Okay.
And it has made a difference.
Oh.
And has made it, because there's so much crap that we put on our stuff. It does make a difference. I would argue that we should have banned importing fruits and vegetables from countries that were using it.
Yes.
We should have said, you know what, no. And that would have helped our farmers, too. That would have encouraged our farmers not to use it if we put – I mean, fruit would cost more.
But the thing about – you know, the thing about that is in the other – you know, the other countries have been using it with success and no reported problems or anything that they had.
Well, we don't know what the cases of autism are, but we know there's increased autism in our country.
Right.
We know there are increased learning disabilities in this country.
Right.
You know, comics like to say, "Well, in our day, it was just stupid." Okay, fun to make a ha ha.
Yeah,
the reality is the medical professionals say something is going on.
Something's wrong. And it seems to me that it must be something environmental.
And they've been using this since the 60s.
Yeah. But the thing is, now, I have not understood that there to be – okay, so say that you're saying now they're not using the total amount, the highest dose that they could use. You know, because I understand why the farmers want to use these things because, you know, it helps their crop yield.
It's probably the cheapest thing.
It's the cheapest thing. It gets rid of, you know, all the bugs and
well, there's other ones. There's something called Off. No, it was Roundup. I'm sorry, Roundup.
Yeah, which is a poison.
Which is a poison. Which they've tried to cut back and using, and now everybody's worried that this EPA is going
to
go back with Roundup.
I would like to see the study, even if they're not using the highest potential dosages. I want to see what's the study with the half-life of this stuff in the children and how repeated intake of this is it's sort of like if you have a little bit of lead paint, not a big deal. But if you have a lot of lead paint, then it's accumulating in your body.
And we know as a society, we're going to foot the bill for all these people with learning disabilities and mental disorders. More people are going to need social services, and as Joe likes to say, handouts, this, that, the other thing.
Well, I mean, financially, we're going to foot the bill.
That's
but
what
I
I'm
mean,
saying.
Emotionally, we're
taking that aside. Right.
Yeah.
I'm just talking about financially.
Yeah.
We're going to pay for this in the end.
But
we're
really, if you're talking about the country's children, can you look at it as a bottom line issue?
Well, I mean, I can.
I mean, on a balance sheet, you're going to say.
No, not on a balance sheet. Yeah. I said, you know, rather be safe than sorry. This is not something I want to mess with. And I don't understand, like, because this isn't a left-right issue. Everybody wants to have healthy kids.
Of course.
Everybody wants to eat better.
I don't even like kids, and I want to have healthy kids here.
I don't know why the Trump administration would take this one on. Well, pick your battles.
I understand that they're going to pick it. They're going to pick that side. For the farmers.
I think... Oh, I'm sorry, sweetie.
No.
Well, they're also doing it for Dow Chemical.
Yeah.
And we know how this administration is going to go with the lobbyists, because we saw with the cable story that we reported on last week. Senate has already signed off on it, and the Trump administration, they haven't signed it yet into law, but the Trump administration has been favorable of it, and nobody wants this. This was lobbied to the hell. This is all big business. This is the worst fear of having a businessman in office. He ran as a populist. This is my worst fear. I said all along, he's not a populist.
He's a businessman.
He ran as a populist, and he's hurting people. And listen, if you're worried about the little guy, you want cheaper fruits and vegetables. Organic fruits and vegetables cost more money.
Yeah.
If a low-income family can even get fresh fruits and vegetables, and a lot of them can't because of where they live,
right,
they're going to buy the cheapest stuff, and the cheapest stuff is going to use these chemicals.
Sure.
See, the one thing I find interesting, and I'm on the fence about this, so just please note that as we go into what I'm saying. Like
put
I said,
the
had the water
set for the record.
The when they did a sample of wells, water wells at daycare centers and schools, they found that there was no evidence of that chemical being in the well water.
And that's a good point, because it's not accumulating in the groundwater, but bodily tissue, although we're not, you know, we're a great percentage water, but bodily tissue is not necessarily composed of water.
Well, right, and
they're finding it in the human beings.
Yes.
Well, that's the thing. So it's a very interesting thing where they're finding that, but they're still saying they have the link to the changes in social behavior through the pregnant women are getting that. So my thing is this. Is that they really, you know, it would be interesting if they looked into that, what the correlation between those two facts are.
Yeah.
I want to say this, and then we'll get out, and we'll do our next, I'll take our first break. I find it very disturbing that a story like this does not get news coverage.
Right.
All the shenanigans that is reported about, all the things that we don't know, cloak and dagger stuff with Russia, very important, but they don't have a lot of answers yet.
Right.
This is something very tangible that people should know about. This should be discussed. This should be in the public forum.
Front page.
We all agree on that?
Yeah, but the media, that's not going to bring people in to watch.
It's not. You're right.
But that's, you know. But again, business. Business.
And this, Joe, is why we need NPR and PBS, because they will cover stuff like that.
Because Big Bird will tell us.
No, Big Bird's on HBO. He wanted to get paid.
I hope. I didn't know that.
Show me the money.
Snuffle up, because don't eat cheap. All right, we'll be back. We're back. We just had a very good conversation about chemicals. And now we're going to talk about another toxin. Something that probably might even affect you more than poison on your fresh fruit. Something that you breathe in.
Unfortunately.
But maybe it's not all bad. Let's just hear what the bumper has to say.
Welcome to Fart Stories.
It's class that you come for, and that's what we provide. All right. We haven't done a fart story in a while. I wonder why. So here we go. Mike surveyed more than – that's a – I don't know what that is. Maybe it's a magazine. I don't know. Surveyed more than 125 people in their 20s and 30s about what they think – when they think it's acceptable to start farting in front of your significant other.
Right.
Some say they let it fly right away. Others wait a year or more. Most people, turns out, are comfortable farting in front of their loved one between 2 to 6 months into the relationship. 29% of people surveyed pick the 2 to 6 month sweet spot, which also coincides with the ideal time.
Sweet spot.
Which which coincides to when people say, I love you. Mm-hmm. 25% said it takes longer, between 6 to 12 months. About 22% said the rip and fart just after a few weeks. 7% people said they would never fart in front of their significant other. Mm. Many people wait for a relationship milestone, including the 7%, like including I love you before they start farting. And 18.6% wait for the other one to fart first. So it's like, you know, the dam breaks.
Standoff.
Yeah, exactly. It's a fart off. Of the people who wait for the other person to fart, 73% are women.
Yeah.
So it's like the women are waiting for the men to fart.
Oh, yeah.
33% of people say once you start sleeping over the other one's place, that's usually when the when it begins.
Well, you're spending like 24 hours a day. Do you want to explode or what?
Right. There's only so much you can run the water on in the bathroom. Robert Huizenga, a clinical therapist, gave some insight. Quote, farting in front of your significant other means you feel free to move beyond your roles. Huizenga wrote on his marriage blog, you may even find yourself discussing family roles and expectations that bring you to each other. You need to carry that burden of continually being – you need not carry that burden of being continually prim and proper. All right, let's get it out here. Let's be a little honest talk.
Hold on a second. You know what, honey? Do you think our children will be farters?
Yeah. Like,
yes, if you fart in front of them, they most certainly will be.
They absolutely will.
I think at this point, Joe is spite farting in front of Joanne.
Oh, yeah, like a circus elephant.
Oh, yeah. She's crop dust in the whole house.
Yeah,
but not before an open
house. I think there's hostile anal issues going on. But I'm before sure. It went all to crap, Joe, would you fart in front of Joanne?
It took about several years.
Really?
Yes.
Wow, that explains why you're so grouchy. What about your current pew, Bo?
Never.
Really? Never. Well, wow.
Yeah, but you have a couple of years before that expires.
Really? How about you?
Only after years and by accident. It was not like, oh, he's here, let it rip. It was like Oh my God! Excuse me.
Did you hear that, duck?
Yeah.
My dad used to blame wildebeest.
Yeah, you know what?
Why?
You gotta let it go. You gotta let it go.
When did you start?
Well, the sleepover started pretty early, mm-hmm. So probably sometime at that point. But I'm pretty sure when it happened, it was not intentional.
Wait a minute. Were shots fired first date?
I hope not. I hope.
Oh, no.
I did do something gross. Not on purpose.
What did you do?
Like, I was drinking orange juice, and we started hooking up, and I think I actually burped in her mouth. By
Were you drunk?
No, I was completely sober.
Dude, you were disgusting.
Acidic orange juice burp.
It was not on purpose, Joe. It was not. I was not spite burping. Not at that point. It was new. It was embarrassing. I'm sure I turned 50 shades of red.
Or orange.
Yeah. Oh, that's hilarious.
Yeah, I mean... But I think the first time she did was like we've been together probably 8 months when we went away on vacation,
mm-hmm.
And I think it was unintentional. I think she like bent over,
yep.
To put something away.
Yes.
Yeah.
Sometimes they come out.
I was putting away the groceries and I had put the bags on the kitchen floor and then boom,
there she blows.
Mr. Ellis,
hark! Is that a foul wind in yonder distance?
It is now. No. Right here in the present.
No, the worst is you let it rip that first time and it stinks. I mean, God forbid.
Oh, God almighty.
God forbid that happens.
God forbid it happens in the car. That's wrong.
Well, when you're first dating somebody, you can't. Listen, I have automatic door locks. Now, let me get you in the car. You take the long way around and you just go fart all the way to the back of the car.
Yes.
Because things build up.
I know.
Yeah.
Oh, that's the worst. Oh, that's the worst thing when you got to hold it in.
Oh, it's painful.
Pesky farts.
Yes, it is painful.
So it is better that you're comfortable enough with each other that you're not in discomfort.
Yeah but I mean, Mr. Alex and I still are like, we will escape to another part of the room, the bathroom or something to let, if you can help.
She's cropped us and the cat.
Why are all the cats lying on their side and cross-eyed?
They've smelled things. Horrible things. I do think it's grosser when a woman farts. And I know it's unfair.
Yeah, that very sexist.
It's very misogynistic.
Yes. Am I wrong?
Not really.
Well, do you think it's grosser for a woman? Because I kind of think we're expected to.
Kind of
what
we do. It's kind of cute.
Really?
Yeah.
What about if it stinks?
Yeah. But I don't think girls fart for the most part.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, honey.
And you talk to us about unicorns.
Yeah.
Flying rainbows.
Flying unicorns.
They are hiding it from you. Oh,
Joe,
honey,
Joe. You've never been in an open relationship then where they can be themselves.
Well, sometimes Joanne is, yeah.
Well, now it's just out of anger. I don't blame her.
Oh, yeah.
I would, if I was her, I'd sneak into your room where you're sleeping and squat over your stupid head. I pretend I was hatching an egg.
Oh, please. She's doing French horn concertos in your bedroom.
I know it's wrong. But
yeah. I know it's wrong.
But I think there's a double standard, and I think justifiably so, because we're expected to be gross. We are despicable beings, men.
Well, humans. Humans are
yes,
dirty,
but,
disgusting.
But it's a natural
beings thing.
So why are you hiding it?
Because
exactly. There's the breakdown in your logic.
In a civilized society. It's a natural thing in a civilized society.
Right, but you know what? Yeah. We're all honking and farting. We're all walking around bunched up. It's uncomfortable.
Yeah, but I like to excuse myself to another room before I let loose with the anal vapors. Mm. You know? I
understand that. But sometimes you're in bed. It's late. You just want to sleep.
Oh, well, if you're asleep, all bets are off.
No, not if you're asleep, but you get ready to sleep. You're not going to jog across the living room when you're in the bedroom, you know, hoping you can outrace your gas.
Maybe.
No, I don't think you are.
But usually I think when you do release one, it's usually when you're trying to pick something up, like Pip said. You're picking something up.
Does saying excuse me mitigate it and make it all cool?
Yes.
Deny.
We heard you. Your pants move.
You don't even have a dog.
You go, oopsie daisy.
Your pants moved. You're not fooling anybody.
No.
Somebody farts on the first date. Deal breaker?
If they do it without excusing themselves, or they seem like proud of themselves.
No, if they go pull my finger.
Oh, gross. Out.
No, I'm saying if they, everyone sneaks out.
Oh, no, that's not a
deal breaker, Joe?
No.
You guys are very generous. Very nice. All right. More show. Don't go anywhere. We're back. You were listening to Davinson. It's been a fun show thus far. Fun's going to continue. We got on the phone friend of ours, friend of the show, David Harris. David, how are you?
Good, guys. How's it going?
Good.
Good. Thank you for joining us.
David's
talked about all different things on the show. Always a very interesting person to speak with. And he has got some news on how Facebook is policing their platform that I did not know about, and I'm assuming a lot of people didn't know about it. Dave, how'd you come across this information?
Oddly enough, I came across it, I was notified by a former listener of my podcast, which you would think, given that I kind of work in cybersecurity, this would have come across my knowledge sooner, that, all this time we have been blaming our friends for reporting our posts on Facebook, when in fact it's probably not them.
Now, have you,
Well,
before we do the big reveal, Dave, we got to build it up. We can't just give the folks the information.
I have to do a big tease, right? This is radio.
We're doing like a big 10-second tease on this. So,
there we go.
There's this information that you're in security, you didn't know about. I do it for the radio show. I didn't know about. The average person doesn't know about. So you get this fan of yours who brings this to you. How does this person know?
I don't know, to be honest with you. I'm not sure how he knew. I only saw him post on Facebook about it.
And so
I just, being curious about it, I investigated it and actually found it to be true.
So you verified it?
No, trust me. No, people listen to my podcast are a bunch of, miscreants and knuckleheads. I'm not taking anything they say at face value.
Even when they say they like the show?
Exactly, especially when they say they like the show.
All right, so Dave, what's the big reveal? What was going on?
There are Facebook security accounts that you cannot block.
What does that mean?
They are able to see the stuff that you post, and if it is deemed not appropriate for Facebook, they're the ones who flag the posts and ultimately determine if you go to Facebook jail.
Now, so even if your settings are in complete lockdown, complete private to just your friends and family, they could still see it.
Yes.
Now, are these profiles that they've created?
They're profile. They look like any other profile, except they are denoted as Facebook security. But they're normal people. I'm assuming they're employed by Facebook. Would make sense that they would be. They're the ones that report your stuff.
Does it say Facebook security, like, in their profile? Like, where, you know, people list their jobs? Does it say Facebook security?
Yeah, it does, actually. It says it next to their name. Now, here's how you can find these people. Go to your block users list and enter the words Facebook security. Now, since this has been starting to go around, a few people have been adding it to their names just as a goof.
Right.
So the way to then verify if the person with the word Facebook security next to their name is actually Facebook security, go ahead and try to block them. If you're able to block them, it's just some knucklehead who put it there as a goof. But if you get kicked back a message saying Facebook is unable to block this user at this time, we apologize for the inconvenience, you found somebody in Facebook security.
That's interesting.
Wow.
Yeah, really. Wow.
So the question is, with these, do you think these Facebook security people, we don't know, but do you think they would, like, friend request accounts that have been flagged a couple of times?
Oh, I would. Absolutely. I mean, think about the way any kind of a network runs. You know, there are algorithms checking for, you know, keywords, words that they've deemed inappropriate, phrases they've deemed inappropriate, images they've deemed inappropriate. And it gets kicked back to these folks who review it and say yay or nay.
But the question is, do you think they would actually friend request somebody? Say, you know, say my account, say I've been in Facebook jail 3 times.
No, I don't think they would. It's never happened to me, and I can't imagine they would actively pursue somebody that they're investigating, especially since they can see it anyway. Why would they?
I almost feel like, though, they would be more stealth if they didn't have this on their profile. Like, why would they? So they're not really trying to hide it.
Yeah, they're not really trying to hide it, but they're not really promoting it either. They're content to let us go on thinking it's other people on our friends list.
I just wound up in Facebook jail, and I assumed it was you.
You should have. I report your posts constantly.
As well you should. No, but I did assume...
Just for not being funny.
Well, shots fired. I did assume, though, that it was a friend. I mean, that's why we had this conversation.
Yeah, exactly. How many times have you seen just, you know, passive aggressive Facebook posts about why did someone, some godless coward on my friends list reported the post? Why don't you just ignore it if you don't, you know? And lo and behold, it's probably not your friends. So take it easy on your friends out there when your post gets reported, because it's probably not them. It's probably Facebook security.
So Facebook security just might catch you randomly.
Yeah, you know, like I said, I wouldn't even say it's random. I'm not entirely certain how things get reported back to them. I can recall an instance where my wife got put in Facebook jail, because she kept insistently, after they kept taking it down, posting photos from a photo shoot that Leonard Nimoy had done of naked fat women. Because apparently that was his deal.
Going where no man's gone.
And so in solidarity, I posted some photos that I had taken from my own business right on my page. I'm like, well, I'll be the husband that goes to Facebook jail with his wife.
Aren't you
they
a hero?
They never flagged me.
All right. Well, that's...
I have no idea how these things get reported back.
Right.
I'm not certain how the algorithm works. There's obviously been... numerous articles written about it, particularly with all the fake news of the election going around being perpetrated by, you know, being not perpetrated, but propagated by social media.
Right.
There's lots of questions about how these algorithms work and how in depth human eyes get into the process.
Mm. Well, certainly something to think about. Thank you for enlightening us. We'll talk to you soon. Thanks, Dave.
Take care, guys.
Take care. Bye-bye. Thank you for hanging out with us on Davin's Den. Very excited. On the phone line, the writer and director of the new film, Is That a Gun in Your Pocket? Mr. Matt Cooper. How are you, Matt?
I'm doing well. How are you guys doing?
Good, man. Thank you for joining us on the Den. We appreciate it.
My pleasure. My pleasure.
You sent us a preview of the movie. Loved it. Tell the audience a little bit what they can expect from it.
Hopefully, mostly to laugh. And then you walk out with a good message, I think. Mm-hmm. First and foremost, it's really a relationship movie, I think. And you walk out with that feeling, would you rather be right or would you rather be happy? That's really the main point of the film. But there's a lot of stuff about gun control because that's the backdrop. It's a small town in Texas, a fictional town,
mm-hmm.
where the women decide to withhold sex from the men until they get rid of every gun in this town. So
the
bound, hopefully.
So in your mind, it wasn't a gun control movie first. It was a relationship movie first.
Yeah, it was a relationship movie. I wrote the first draft about 20 years ago.
Oh, wow.
And originally it was going to be nuclear power, and then I changed it to guns. It was actually before Columbine.
Oh, wow.
Wow.
Crazy.
So is this gun control, is that an issue that's personally important to you, or it was just a backdrop for the movie and you thought it was a good catalyst?
Well, it initially was a good backdrop and a catalyst, and then as time has gone on, now I think it's just really important. And once Newtown happened, and you start to think, if that doesn't get these cowards in Congress to act, mm-hmm. a bunch of little 5-year-old kids getting shot up in a school, if that doesn't get you to have some reasonable gun control, I don't know what is. I mean, I guess they got to shoot people on the Supreme Court or in Congress. Who knows? I don't know.
That's a good suggestion.
Do.
We're not suggesting that.
So, but admittedly, though, this is a very controversial topic. Where, as you're saying, even Congress and the Supreme Court doesn't want to touch it. But here you are. You're this writer. You're this director. The way movies make money is to get as many people to watch the movie as possible. It's possible to write a movie like this. You're going to alienate a good percentage of the audience. Was that a concern?
Well, it's happened. In fact, what's really interesting is I've gotten hit by the far left and the far right.
Oh, wow.
Far right, from people who haven't even seen the movie and just kind of pan it or go on IMDb and they kind of, no pun intended, shoot it down without even having seen it. And then the far left kind of feels like the film doesn't go far enough because I didn't set out to make a documentary. It's an entertaining film, hopefully, and
yes.
And it really is a comedy. So it's kind of tough to balance having that right tone where you want to tell a story, you want to like the characters, you want to laugh, and then you kind of sprinkle in a little bit of vegetables with your candy. And so for the far left, it doesn't go far enough.
I can only imagine.
So,
that the far left, right? I guess, wanted what? There'd be more casualties or something? I mean, because I don't know what more you could have done to please them, to be honest.
I think they wanted the film to be darker, more serious.
Mm-hmm.
There were some people that even said, the people in Newtown must be turning over in their graves. And I actually met people from, who are victims of, and families who were victims of gun violence. And I asked them that question. I said, how do you feel about having sat through this film now, this comedy about such a serious subject matter? And they said to me that they were really happy about it because they just want to get in the room and have dialogue. And they're happy for anything that kind of raises it. To me, it's like a throwback to, All in the Family or, some of these comedy shows that take on these serious topics like race or abortion, and they do it with funny, with a funny touch, a funny hand.
So this was your,
this
was your very special Different Strokes episode. That's what this was, because in Different Strokes they had the thing with, I believe it was pedophilia, child abuse,
yeah,
sexual abuse. That was on Different Strokes, a sitcom, and they covered a heavy topic like that. So that was kind of your model, something like that.
Exactly. Roseanne, all the big ones have really done it.
Right. Okay.
This is sort of the old-time sitcoms meets Lysistrata.
Yeah, that's true.
Now, I'm watching this. To me, it was clear that you parodied the NRA and Wayne LaPierre. Right. Yep. Have you heard from them? Have they commented?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. We were actually featured on the NRA News, if you can believe it. I didn't even know there was a radio show called the NRA News. So, you know, I'm listening to this. Someone told me about it. They tipped me off, and I listened to it. And, you know, and by the way, the film hadn't even come out yet.
Uh-huh.
So they were panning it, saying this, you know, Hollywood hack. It was funded by gun control, money. I was like, if that's the case, send them my way because, you know, I would love to get some of that gun control money because we didn't have any.
Sure, absolutely.
And I'm listening to this, and, you know, I'm a hack and a terrible filmmaker, all this stuff. And I'm like, first thing I said is, hey, Ma, I made the NRA News.
Sure, she was proud.
So it was pretty wild, actually.
But this movie does have a political message attached. So when you're putting this movie together and actors and actresses are getting the script, I mean, yep. Do they have to kind of have the same political ideas as you? Does that even come into play? Is there a discussion? I want the part.
It did not come into play at all. We never really talked about politics in rehearsal or on the set. We only talked about their characters and their relationships. And we did have some social media going before we started shooting in pre-production. And we started to get the trolls and some threats. So I took it down because I didn't want, you know, any violence to happen to the cast or crew.
Right.
So we took that down and we changed the name of the film while we were shooting. And so that was that.
I believe while you were shooting,
there are gun owners in the cast, mm-hmm. And there are some actually conservative people in the cast. I didn't find out about that until you know much later. We just never talked about it.
Well, listen, an actor's got to eat. I understand. Now, is it true that during you did change the name? Is it true that you changed it to a Star Wars Episode 7 as you were filming?
Yeah, right. No, I think it was called "Is That a Fart in Your Pocket?"
Oh, it most certainly is. How was it?
And then all the Howard Stern people started trolling it.
Nice. Yeah, you got a very good cast. A lot of recognizable faces to other people. When they watched the movie, but one that I love, Cloris Leachman. How was it working with Cloris?
It's an interesting exercise, I got to tell you. She's got a lot of energy, and she has no filter at all. So
that comes through.
It's pretty wild, you know. And I guess when you're 90 years old, you get to do or say whatever you want, especially if you've won an Academy Award.
She's 90?
So,
wow.
It was a lot of fun.
Uh-huh.
And also a little bit of a challenge, you know. She keeps you on your toes, that one.
Well, you know what? She's 90. She can pretty much say what she wants, I guess.
And she does.
I was happy to see her in that. Before my final question, you guys have anything you want to add?
No, it was funny.
I think you got positive reviews on Rotten Tomatoes as well.
Thank you. We've had both, to be honest with you. We get, like I said, if you have really kind of left-wing media, it's we get some harsh comments. But what's interesting is from the Washington Times, a very conservative paper, we got an amazing review. They actually said it was one of the best films of the year.
Wow.
So I was really lucky with that. But yeah, if it's on iTunes right now, mm-hmm. and a few others. So if you go to isthatagun.com, it'll direct you right to the page where you guys can download it and see it.
So all right, so you go to isthatagun.com, and they'll tell you all the different ways you can see it. Is it a couple dollars? Is it $5?
Or you go to iTunes.
Okay.
Or it's on Amazon, I think. I can't remember what else, to be honest.
Is there a sequel in the works?
No, there are people trying to get me to do a television series based on the characters, and but no sequel right now.
Very cool. Well, Matt, we enjoyed the film. Thank you for coming on Davin's Den. We look forward to more work from you in the future.
Great. Well, thanks so much. Appreciate the time.
Take care, Matt. Bye-bye.
You be well, guys.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
We're back. Thank you for hanging out with us. Been a fun show so far. Been all over the place like I said it was going to be. I would not lie to you folks. So we'll end with some comics in the news.
And now it's time for Comics in the News.
New study out about folks with a dark sense of humor.
We'll just let that sit. Simmer.
Sorry.
Pip Helix, ladies and gentlemen, Pip Helix. Researchers found people who prefer dark humor tend to score highly on tests of intelligence and emotional stability. Look at her laughing at that. She don't buy it because she knows her.
Yeah.
Psychologists from the Medical University of Vienna.
Oh.
I wonder if that's where Freud went. Studied people's reactions to sick jokes from a cartoon book called The Black Book by Uli Stein.
Oh, that's interesting.
The researchers define dark humor as a kind of humor that treats sinister subjects like death, disease, deformity, handicap, or warfare with bitter amusement, presents such tragic, distressing, or morbid topics in humorous terms. I think that's how I describe our show.
Dead babies.
The researchers found this kind of sense of humor is a mark of intelligence. Black humor, preference, and comprehension are positively associated with higher verbal and nonverbal intelligence, as well as higher levels of education, the author wrote in the study published by the Journal of Cognitive Processing. By the way, I suggest you get a home subscription to that. The researchers asked the failing cognitive processing.
Did you see my new copy of Cognitive Processing?
It's in the toilet where you always leave it.
Thank you, dear.
It's where I do my best thinking.
That's your thinking throne.
Of course.
The researchers asked 156 participants. I wonder how they pick these numbers.
I know.
These are the only ones that would show up. I don't understand.
The people that walk past them outside the grocery store.
Yeah, maybe. To rate dark humor cartoons. The participants were asked whether they understood the joke, whether they thought it was good, and whether they found it surprising, vulgar, or interesting. Mm. Same questionnaire we hand out after the show.
Yeah, I know. It's called My Weekend.
Yeah. Interesting's never in there. Each participant was also tested for different aspects of their personality, including intelligence, emotional stability, and aggressiveness. People who understood and appreciated the dark humor scored more highly on the test for verbal and nonverbal intelligence. They also scored less highly than others on tests for emotional instability and aggressiveness. The researchers say the link may be because it takes more both cognitive and emotional skills to understand jokes and get their humor. All right. I don't think you have to be more intelligent to get dark humor. I think it helps, but I don't think it's a prerequisite.
Yeah, I don't think so either. I mean, you know, it depends if you like that, like how.
Well, obviously, but they're trying to explain why you like it.
Yeah, I understand that. I understand, but I think be the average.
I think that there might be an element to it because some people just don't understand the fact that, like sarcasm or dark humor, when you're using it, that you are being, you're saying something that is the opposite or like much deeper than where you would normally go.
Yeah.
They think, oh my God, that's what
right.
You really think? You're gonna do you think dead babies are humorous?
But somebody might like that who's not intelligent and just likes the idea of that.
Oh, but that's a psychopath.
But
yes.
But that's not in here.
Right. But,
you're gonna pull the wings off butterflies? I love that joke.
maybe they should presume we're talking about not psychopaths.
Well, they're presuming that these people are more emotionally stable.
I know. I don't think that that's a presumption we can make.
Well, I think so.
No, we cannot.
I think emotionally stable where you could look at a dark humor or a dark humor joke, obviously, and and rationalize that this is a joke. It's meant to be in the context of being funny.
Interesting.
The writer did not make it to be mean or insensitive. They're just making it on a lighthearted side. I could see that side. That's you're reasoning it.
Yeah, but I don't know if that's emotional stability, but I do think that might be the cognitive processes that they're talking about.
That's
yeah.
It, yeah.
Well, a lot of people use dark humor for a coping mechanism, too. You know, when things are really going terrible, then all of a sudden you talk about, you know, you just, like,
well, I find,
blow
I
it
agree
up
with
and,
you.
So it's hyperbole.
I find the people that really enjoy dark humor the most, in my experience, police,
yes.
Firemen,
yes.
Military,
oh, yes.
Emergency
yes.
Room,
yes.
People, and comedians.
Yes.
So,
yes.
Those,
yeah.
Because they've seen some stuff.
Yes.
So it really takes a lot to move the needle on them.
Yes.
But I don't know if that means they're more emotionally stable or they're smarter than anybody. I just think they're more jaded to awfulness.
Well, let's say you tell a joke that's, you know, a dark humor joke. That's awful. The person that said that's awful didn't take the time to understand the joke, you know, deduce that it was meant as a joke, and sort of like a defense against something that dark.
So can you understand my anger at an audience when they do that type of thing on my jokes? When I can you understand
when
my
Yes. Oh.
Because they're not taking – I should give them Joe's explanation. You're not taking the time to process. You're adult, and you don't know what an adult is. Not an adult,
well,
adult.
Well, you got to remember, in the context of a comedy show, if you've got like 250 people there and 15 people go, oh, you're going to – now you got 15 people. And in a show, you just heard 15 people go, oh.
And you're making everybody else feel self-conscious about thinking it's funny.
Yeah, and I do shows. I call them groaners.
Yeah.
We all call them groaners, Joe. Yeah.
So
– the acting was better last week, more on point.
But
that was a good fake laugh.
No, really not.
It was too. Take her up. But anyway, so those people just take a topic and don't research and process it. It's the key word here is processing.
Well, they're defending themselves away from the reality of the thing, which people who appreciate dark humor are embracing it and making it something bigger, making, using, like, sarcasm or using satire to say, okay, here's the thing. It's awful. Let's deal with it. You know, instead of like going, oh, don't talk like that.
Yeah, yeah.
Is somebody who, I don't, having dark humor is not a turnoff to me.
No, I love that.
But I could see it being a turnoff to somebody else.
Yeah, I could.
Like taking pleasure in awful things.
Yeah.
I could see that being. And it's almost, there's almost something sweet about somebody who doesn't like the awful that I like.
I just think...
although I find that boring, to be honest.
Yeah, but
I was going to say, really, that gets old quick.
It does. It does, because I've done that. I've been with very nice people. I've talked about it before on the show. Not my cup of tea.
Mm. I'm jealous of them, because I'm thinking, oh, you haven't seen some really, really awful things yet, have you? Sweet little buttercup.
Your act dark?
Not really, no.
I don't think your act is dark.
No, my act isn't dark.
You just saw some of my act. What do you think? Is it dark?
No, not as much as other people. I think that the guy that came up and started going dark right away with the hood on, I think he could go very dark.
But I'm not dark. I'm more edgy.
Edgy.
Not dark. Now, I got a couple dark things. I mean, I got some pedophile jokes. Don't sell me short.
Yeah, no. Yeah, that's dark. But overall, no.
Anybody going to be anywhere?
No.
No.
Right.
Things are going wonderful.
We have no lives.
Now the next 2 weeks, no. It's like I drum something up.
Friday, April 21st, Sidesplitting Productions presents live comedy at Portobello Banquets in Oakland, New Jersey. For tickets, call 201-337-8990, extension 2. Saturday, April 22nd, I'll be in Chester, New York at Joker's Comedy Club. For tickets, call 845-345-1039. As always, the full show, unedited, complete interviews. Davinsden.com. Like us on Facebook, Davinsden. Follow us on Twitter @Davinsden. Thank you for hanging out with us. If you like us, tell a friend. If you hate